What up, folks? What it do? Welcome to another episode of the Best Advice Ever podcast. Yeah, with your boy, Mike Goodwin. Now, I thought I was going to switch it up and do the best advice first and then do on the road later, but no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep the routine going. Why change? Why fix what's not broken, huh? Why mess up the flow? If we're flowing, keep it going. So I'm going to start this episode with the On the Road Again segment. Now, I was not on the road this week. I was home. And man, this week went, forget the week went so fast. This year, bro, like May is knocking at the door. I can remember being in January. Because at my church, we fast the month of January. So, like, I'm desiring to get to February because I have a pretty regulated eating schedule. So, fasting for 30 days, I mean, it really tears me up because, hey, man, the way I move is not like a normal 9 to 5. I'm up 5 o'clock in the morning. My workouts. So January is a haul. Like, it's a slug for me to get through the month of January. And I just can remember thinking, like, wow, it's taking forever to get to February. But then we didn't got to February, March, and April. It's like, whoa, 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 slow it down, buddy. Slow it down. So this week, since I wasn't on the road, out of here. But I did go on the road to see another comedian. I saw one of my favorite comedians, like, that's doing it now. A gentleman by the name of Ali Sadiq. Ali Sadiq and Marcus Wiley, because Marcus Wiley is a good friend of me. He's a good friend of me. I don't know why. It's a good friend of mine. So Marcus and Ali are out of Houston. Out of Houston, kicking it. I have a lot of respect for Houston. Matter of fact, I call when I talk to my friend, when I talk to Marcus, I often talk about the difference between Houston and a city like Columbia. I don't think Columbia is a real city. Where I live, it's not a major city. Like, I say real city being funny, but it's not a major city. We don't have an Apple store. Let's start there. There's no Apple store. There's no Cheesecake Factory. How do you have a city without a Cheesecake Factory? Not that I even love cheesecake like that, but like, yo, I would like to have the option. No Top Golf. Like, we got a bunch of indoor simulators, but there's no Top Golf in Columbia. That's what real cities have, major cities. But what major cities have is professional teams, and we don't have a professional team. So I'm always cracking jokes on my place of residence, Columbia. Then I went to go see Ali and Marcus in Augusta, which apparently is a real city because Augusta has all these things. Augusta has an Apple store. Augusta has a Cheesecake Factory. They have a Top Golf. They have a PF Chang's. They don't have a professional. They don't have a professional team either. But I feel like Augusta's a little bit more professional. More of a major city than Columbia. Then they have the Masters. That's big time right there. Columbia has none of this. But I went on the road to check out my buddies, Ali Sadiq, Marcus Wiley, and Augusta, man. Outstanding show. Had a wonderful time. Ali is phenomenal. He's probably one of the most phenomenal comics that's out currently. And again, same as true with Marcus. Marcus Wiley is one of the most incredible comedians to me personally. because not only is he a mentor, someone who, before I even got started, was a person I was looking at like, yo, that's an icon or a role model. But over the years, like, we've gotten good. Like, I probably talk to Marcus 3 times a week. Easily talk to Marcus 3 times a week, without a doubt. But what Marcus, from a comedic standpoint, what he did that all blew me away when I found this out. Marcus Wiley has, I would venture to say, at least 12 comedy specials or albums that he has produced, like different albums that he has produced. I would say I own at least 7 to 8 of these, right? What Marcus does as a comedian, I've never seen anybody do this. This was the most ridiculous thing. I mean, it was just like astonishing. Marcus, as soon as he gets his hour of material together, he records it. Then he spends the next year polishing it up. I've never seen that before. It's like, the majority of comedians do it, is they get their hour together, they polish it, they get it sharp, then they record it. No. Marcus gets the hour. As soon as he feels like he has an hour, he records it. It's good. It's a good hour. It's great. But when you go see him live, the hour's far better than what you even saw on the video. And the video is great. It's like he's taking a sword that's sharp and sharpened it even more. Like, I've never in my good living life. I'm about to making up phrases. So that continuously blows me away by how people from Houston, the Houston comedians I know, I just like their approach to it. I've been heavily influenced by Marcus Wilde. I've been heavily influenced by Ali Sadiq. Ali Sadiq is clearly probably the best storytelling comedian in the game right now. I think if you look at over the course of history, he might be one of three. I mean, I know Cosby was pretty tremendous. Carlin, I need to go and look and see what kind of, was he a storytelling kind of guy? Ali's really of that caliber of storytelling and stand-up. So I went to Augusta to check out the show. Outstanding show. Had a great time. Also, got on a call today with a business coach. And I just wanted to share. This just had nothing to do with on the road. This was just something profound that I learned and heard. This business coach said today that procrastination is a form of self-abuse. Procrastination and even like being overwhelmed and a paralysis of analysis, like not doing anything. Like when you find yourself in those spots, that's a form of self-abuse because you're not hurting anyone but you. So that's really going to make me take another look and evaluate. Like when I get, because I can easily, like one of my challenges is that I can become so overwhelmed that I become indecisive. And when you become indecisive, you don't even do anything. This coach said the same thing, also said that being indecisive is worse than making a bad decision. Because at least with a bad decision, you have somewhere to go from there. Like you have some data, you got a spot that you can pivot from. Indecision, you ain't got nothing. You just out here frailing. I've tried to say that word before. Failing, but frailing. Flailing. There it is. Flailing. Like the blow up used car balloon that's just out, this bobbling all over, this falling all over the place. This is indecision. Like, man, that was a word. Now, here's the moment that we've been waiting for. We've all been waiting for. It's the name of the podcast. It's the best advice ever. So the best advice ever that I will share with you today is simply ask for help. Help. Somebody help me. Ask for help. Don't allow your pride, your ego, your stubbornness to keep you in a place of stuff or a place of struggle. A few things have happened that made me think about this advice. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and we were at dinner, and she had someone she had known that was at dinner, and we were kind of having this conversation, and I said something that hurt my friend's feelings. I said something that she was like, "Whoa, Mike, like, that's not how it went down." Like, I made a comment like, "Hey, man, this person executed this thing and never asked my opinion on it." And my friend was sitting there like, "Yo, you never offered your opinion on it." So there was a little bit of miscommunication and misconceived notions, right? And from my vantage point, from my position, it would have been very clear had my friend just asked for some help and said, "Hey, this is where I am. This is what's going on." And my friend was looking like, "Hey, man, you could have just offered the help. Like, I didn't have to ask for it. Why am I needing to ask for it?" And because she presented me with the idea. And I just simply told her, because after we have, like, so she was like, "Yo, I told you about it." And then she's sitting back thinking, like, "I'm just going to offer information." And I'm telling from my perspective, after we had this conversation, I never thought about it again until I found out later that it was in motion, like it was going down. So it wasn't like I was withholding the information because you didn't ask for it. It's just that I didn't think about it. I'm over inundated with what I got going on. So I didn't take the moment to look and say, "Wait a minute, she probably would need to hear this from me." But what would have eliminated all that if she just simply would have asked for help. I'm talking to myself. One of the things I'm doing, and I'm asking you for help. If you're out there, you're listening, please. I know I often say, "Hey, man, shoot me a message or a question if you have it at info@comedianmikegoodwin.com. And even in the YouTube comments, you can leave a post or some information. But I'm asking for help around how does people that you're following and that you're interested in, what do they do that you've seen to be successful to sell tickets? Because that's where I am. I'm y'all. If y'all been with me, you realize that I've just kicked off my first official tour, the Big Dad Energy Tour, and I got to sell these tickets, man. And outside of, you know, some Facebook ads, outside of talking about it, outside of sending out emails, you know, I'm really like, "Yo, what can I do more effectively to sell these tickets, man?" And I think one of the things I can do is increase my profile, have more people know who I am, do things that are hitting the radar of other folks. And one of those things is like social media, doing videos and content, which I have no problem doing it, but I just don't know if the stuff I do is getting the result I want. So any type of advice that you have to offer as it relates to selling tickets, I'm open-eared. I would and I'll hear it. I mean, I don't necessarily know if it, you know, if it's something I'll be able to execute, but I'm open to say, hey, man, I'm asking for some help. What do you think would be beneficial to me as I continue to venture and sell these tickets to the Big Dad Energy Tour? Had a great turnout. And Marietta, we talked about that. But so this is a great example, right? I did the Marietta show. That was a Friday. That was April the 19th. And I have a run of shows in North Carolina and South Carolina. My first show will be in January the 18th, which is my birthday, in Greenville. Then I'll be the 20th will be in Hickory, North Carolina. The 21st will be in Greensboro, and then the 18th, the 19th, the 20th. So the 19th is in Hickory, the 20th is in Greensboro, North Carolina, and the 21st is in Charlotte, North Carolina, right? So I get a message from my booking, my people, the guy that does the stuff. And basically the message was like, hey, I was talking to the Comedy Zone people, because that's who booked in the Comedy Zone. And out of all the people that are selling tickets now until the end of August, your tickets are the weakest numbers in all four locations. Now, I'm coming off a Marietta show where I almost sell it out. Like, it's 300 plus tickets sold. And I'm Ali, boom, bye, yay. I'm high-fiving. I'm kind of doing my victory lap. And before I could even get off the track, I get this. Now, this next show, these next run of shows, these are four shows. This is in July. So to get an email that says basically, hey, you're the weakest selling ticket of everybody in all locations, like, maybe if I was strong in one area and two areas, I wouldn't have gotten that email. But because I have four cities that I feel pretty good about Greenville, because I mean, I'm from South Carolina. There are people often asking when I'm gonna be in Greenville. I feel pretty good about Charlotte. I was in Cornelius last September, sold that out. Now Greensboro and Hickory, yeah, I'm not feeling super confident that a whole bunch of folks, I'm going to get to those shows. But, man, I haven't even really started advertising or making a push to say, hey, I'm coming to these areas. I've said it, and people know, but I talked to the guy today again. It was like, I'm in an era of the TikTok people, of the TikTok folks. So the folks that I'm selling tickets alongside are either veterans that's been selling tickets for some time, or these are the new kind of TikTok folks, and they put one ad up and tickets are sold. I haven't created that mechanism. I don't have that infrastructure where I say, hey guys, I'll be in Hickory, North Carolina, and then as soon as the word is out, it's a wrap, right? So I am asking for help. I'm asking. Somebody might say, hey, man, get on TikTok and start dancing. That might get you to sell tickets. But ask for help. Ask for help. Don't allow life circumstances, challenges. There are resources that are available to all of us if we just ask for help. I mean, the call that I was on today, it was a part of a program. They had a business coach that you can have a session with. And it was a part of the resources that's available to me in this program. And this business coach will provide me with a tremendous amount of value. Tremendous amount of value already, just some of the things, the conversations that we had. But that came from me asking for some help, and not asking necessarily for help, but I was engaging with the community, and they were like, hey, we have this other asset that you can take advantage of. It sounds like you need to talk to a business coach and let's get some frameworks together. So that being said, do not allow yourself to be around help, to be around resources and not ask for help, not to say, hey, man, I really would. Don't tell people you want to pick their brain. That people don't like hearing that. Say, hey, I need some help. I need some help. Can I get on your calendar? Can I shoot you an email? Can I give you a call? Don't just Google everything, man. Don't just YouTube everything. Make some real personal connections with the human capital that you have developed relationships with over the years, met and cultivated relationships with individuals and communities. Don't allow yourself to not ask for help. And that's the best advice ever today. Now, I want to do a segment. I've been thinking about this, and I want to start going back and looking at like 90s movies that I really didn't watch a lot and kind of re-see them in the 2024 eyes that I have. And just go back, like, because there's a number of movies I've seen probably once and haven't seen again. I'm thinking about movies. And I'm thinking about, you know, quote unquote, black movies, you know, movies about the culture for me growing up. And for not just me, but if you look at entertainment, black folks had the like the 70s black exploitation movement where you had like the Shafts and you had the Dolemites and you had the kind of action hero, Action Jackson, these black figures that were super crime fighting. What you talking about, sucker? Came in, saved the day, but a pretty one-sided, not a lot of development about them. You just saw this big, bad black person that could fight and they could shoot and that would just show up and save the day. So they had like these really, really strange storylines, right? Or there's also a tremendous amount of movies that center around slavery. Just a lot of movies that if the majority of the individuals that are in the movie are black, it's the slave situation in some type of manner. So you look at, and again, this is my rough outline of African Americans in entertainment, but you look at the late 70s, you know, we had the shows, not shows, but movies like Let's Do It Again, Uptown Saturday Night with Sidney Poitier, Bill Cosby. So you had some things that were like, oh yeah, that's great cinema. But then like you had this black exploitation. Then you go off into like the 80s, you got some of the gang stuff, Colors, then you had like the breaking. So it was a little heavy on the entertainment, heavy on crime. Then you get into like the 90s, which is what I grew up. And you start looking at black films and they started having a little bit more diversity, a little bit more range where they were trying to tell multiple stories, not just the story of the crime fighting, leather coat wearing black superhero from the streets. They started having stories about kind of the everyman story, like the guy making his way. You know, I'm thinking about Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that's a black movie, but it was a black lead. But then you start having the movies like Waiting to Exhale, House Party, Juice, Lean on Me, like all these different types of stories, boys in the hood of trying to communicate the different aspects of Black culture and African-American life where it artistically, I think there was an attempt to say we're not a monolith. We're not all of the same mindset and we all aren't of the same opinion on everything. And so there was an explosion of entertainment, movies especially, movies, you know, Spike Lee, Do the Right Thing, all the Spike Lees, you got to have it. Crooklyn, I don't know if Crooklyn was the 90s, but it's a number of just movies that Black folks were beginning to have access. I'm thinking about Who's the Man? That's an obscure jewel right there. One of my favorite Notorious B.I.G. songs. Party. And, oh, I can't say that on the podcast. But, so I want to go back. I want to go back and take a look at some of the cinema from my formative years. And I just did that with a movie, Waiting to Exhale. Waiting to Exhale was a movie that basically was from a book. It's from a book. The plot is basically, I think I had written down. Yeah, here we go. This movie actually is filmed in 1995. By that time, I was an adult. I was out in the military in 95. But this movie was directed by Forrest Whitaker, which is information to me. Didn't know Forrest Whitaker was out here directing the movies, but it was written a book. Terry McMillan, she'd written a book, Waiting to Exhale. And basically it was star-studded cast. Yeah, Whitney Houston, Angela Bassett, Loretta Devine, Lila Rashawn, Leon, Gregory Hines, Wesley Snipes, Donald Faison, Wendell Pierce. And the basic premise of the plot was these four women, and it's their difficulties in finding a good man. One woman was going through a divorce. Another woman, husband had, I didn't realize this until I rewatched it. Her husband was gay, and he had, I guess they were estranged. I don't know if they got divorced, but he would kind of come to town to see his child. And then you had Whitney Houston character, you know, working her way up corporate America. But she had a long-term relationship with a married man. And then it was another character in which she just was the boy crazy individual that just kind of found herself in these toxic relationships, these bad relationships. So I'm going to give you my insights, just random insights, because I first saw this movie back in 95. I saw it in a theater in Rock Hill, South Carolina. I used to date a girl that went to Winthrop University. I remember going to see this movie, and it made me feel a way. At this point, I'm probably 20-year-old dude, young Black guy in the Army, with aspirations of getting out of the Army and going to college. I'm taking my girlfriend to this movie about Black relationships. That's kind of what my thought was. And then I get in there and they are just hammering the brothers, man. They were not easy on the brothers. So some of the insights I had about this movie, they smoked a bunch of cigarettes. There's a lot of cigarette smoking in 1990, man. They were lighting up the cigarettes. That kind of caught me off guard. Clothes were huge in the 90s, man. Why were our clothes so big? The State Farm guy, my man, from the State Farm commercial, he was having an affair, man. Dude was out here having an affair. The Allstate. Allstate. Jake, you can't even think about insurance now, man. The State Farm has done a great job. Allstate, my man from the Allstate commercials, was in the movie being unfaithful to his wife. What else insight? A good dude didn't show up in the movie until like an hour in. like all the dudes that you were introduced to on the film were trash. And I'll talk about this in a second, but it was an hour before a solid guy showed up on film, and I was like, on the screen, I was like, all right, they'll go a good guy. But shout out to the good dudes, man. The good dudes don't get enough love. We never saw the woman that the husband, Angela Bassett's character, left her for. Now, there was this woman that she slapped in the meeting, but I don't know if that was the woman that he was leaving her for. Maybe I'm mistaken. If you know this movie a little better than me, that might have been her. I never saw the woman that he left her for. Also, the pastor was not lame. Most times, I've noticed in a number of movies, especially black movies, pastors are kind of caricatures of real pastors. So they just seem sleazy. They seem shady, underhanded, like they up to no good. They didn't have much of them, but he was not a lame, shady pastor. They went to an amusement park. There was a whole scene in an amusement park. We was doing the amusement parks in the 90s. Are y'all doing amusement parks like that modern day? At the end, it was a lot of burning. They burned a lot of cigarettes. They burned some wood at the end. They burned down a car was burnt. It was a lot of burning. There was also trauma for me. I was triggered. There's a scene, and there's a Not Gonna Cry to Mary J. The soundtrack was incredible. Outstanding. That's one thing about the 90s. I'm thinking, y'all could send me some suggestions. I'm thinking movies like Jason Lyric. What's the one with Tupac and Janet Jackson? Jason Lyric is that other one. Tupac and Janet Jackson. Let me do that. Oh, we're not connected. I turned off my thing. Man, I hate. What's the movie with Tupac and Janet Jackson? Poetic Justice. I know y'all like Poetic Justice. That's it. Yeah, there was a lot of soundtracks with dope from those 90s film. A couple of more insights. They burned down the closet. I also thought about Left Eye. She burned down Andre Rize's home. So they were setting stuff on fire. Women were setting stuff on fire back in the 90s. Out of the whole movie, I'm saying it was like two good dudes in the movies. I know my man that lived across the street, Gregory Hines character, seemed like it was a good, solid dude. Wesley Snipes was a good dude. Now, there was another dude. I don't think he wasn't a good dude, but he wasn't seen in the best light. The guy, Wendell Pierce's character, was his name, that he was trying to be with one of the women, and she didn't necessarily find, she wasn't the kind of dude she wanted to be with. So I think he didn't get the the love he should have got, because I don't think he was a bad dude. He wasn't a bad dude. So I'm saying two dudes, but it's probably three dudes, because my man should have probably been considered a good guy. And then last but not least, that was kind of, I can remember like watching this movie thinking like Wesley Snipes would probably be the first person I kind of like, oh, that's me. So this has kind of started like the idea, like I've always had an idea of being a good man. Like even when I was not a good man, and that would, but in terms of like how I dealt with women, I always was an honest man. Now, I might have not been doing good deeds, but I always was honest. I always was straightforward. So even when I was a bad man, I was not as bad on the scale of badness. I just might have not been committed. I never was not faithful. I never cheated on a person that I was in a relationship with. I just was for the streets. I haven't been for the streets in so long. I can vaguely even remember being from the streets. Well, this is an episode that went a little longer, and I wanted to talk about some other things, which I will in a future podcast. But what you're not going to do is say you didn't enjoy this episode. Thank y'all so much for tuning in, man. Again, if you have some suggestions on selling these tickets, I would love to hear your thoughts. I would love to hear from you just in general, man. Thank y'all so much for rocking with me. And we're going to keep this thing going. See you next time. We're going to keep it same bat place, same bat channel. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with me. And I appreciate it. See you next time. Peace.